Welcome to the StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. Illinois StarNet envisions a future where early childhood professionals and families have the supports needed to provide all children with a high-quality, equitable education in inclusive environments. StarNet's mission is to promote evidence-based inclusive practices for young children with disabilities, professional development to support educators and families, meaningful child outcomes through innovative and engaging learning experiences. To find out more about StarNet Regions 1 and 3, please visit starnet.org/home.
Hello, this is the Developmentally Appropriate Practices series, where we explore concepts from the recently revised DAP position statement. I'm your host, Emily Riley, and today I am chatting with Talene Tocat, who is an inclusion specialist with Early Choices. Welcome, Talene, and thanks for being a guest today on the series.
Hi, Emily. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. And I know there is just so much content, really rich content to kind of reflect upon with this revised position statement. Mm-hmm. So I think to get us started, I would just love to hear, you know, what is it that you really go back to a lot within this position statement? Are there some particular concepts within the three core considerations that you really find yourself kind of going back to or using in your work frequently?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely agree with you. There's so much within this position statement that I think we could be here all day to dig into them, which is wonderful. But I think when we're looking at those core considerations and then thinking about my own work around the inclusion of children with disabilities, the piece that really speaks to me is that individuality core consideration. I think even just within that brief description of what we're trying to uphold there is so powerful for a lot of different reasons. I think there's a few that really stick out to me in particular for individuality. The first is that we see this acknowledgement of the fact that children have various social identities, which I think is so important for us to be thinking about when we consider all the ways that we need to be exploring supports for them within the classroom. So even within my work as Early Choices, we explicitly talk about children with disabilities, but that doesn't mean that we're putting aside all the different aspects of their identity that they bring with them into the classroom. So I think seeing that within the core consideration and knowing that that's explicitly there is so powerful for all of us in the field to know, not just for the kiddos we support, but for how we show up in the classroom or supporting staff or related service, whoever it might be as well. So that first piece around social identities, I think, is so strong and frankly exciting to see there.
That was one of the pieces that I was really excited about too, just that more of that emphasis. I think there's always been that focus in previous editions, but it just seems like so much more explicit and just kind of embedded so much more throughout the position statement. And then also the book that they recently published, just, you know, so much of that overlap too, between the three core considerations and how identity impacts, you know, all aspects there. So yeah, it's definitely, definitely exciting to see that there. So I wonder, like, what are some ways you find yourself kind of leaning on that information in your work with educators in Illinois?
Yeah. So one of the other things that's really explicit here within that is the fact that they do talk about ability. So they are saying we have to be reflecting upon children's abilities in terms of what they are able to do. And that's the other thing that I think really stands out, is that this is very much what I view as a positive approach to the ways that we're supporting children. So I know even within here, we sort of see this call to explore children's knowledge, skills, abilities, their interests, their strengths, and their preferences. And that piece on strengths and preferences is one that we call on a lot in our work, because what we're always trying to emphasize is the point that when we're thinking about how to support children with disabilities, we really want to start with what they can do, right? What is it that's really working for them right now? What supports do we have in place that we as professionals should be celebrating and honoring and holding on to? Because I think often the temptation is to think like we're just starting from ground zero and we don't know what's here and it's going to be hard to just think about what's working, when the reality of it is that this child does have interests that we can follow. We can dive into it with the family as well to get their insight. That's the other thing that's within this core consideration that's great to see, is that, and it's within all of them, but within individuality as well, as thinking about them within the context of their family. And oftentimes when we're working with folks, or if we're in a professional development opportunity, we're really emphasizing that the family is kind of an untapped resource so often. And so, as you can see, even just from those couple sentences, how many different ways it kind of falls into the work that we do. But it really does speak to all the different components that can come up when we're trying to have professionals be really strategic about how they are even thinking about the ways they're supporting kiddos and having that positive mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those pieces you brought in with strength-based and preferences, really we think about those, like, I mean, really technically preferences and interests, right, is considered a curriculum modification. Mm-hmm. And so, people that maybe come from the, have a background within special education, that might be something they're very familiar with. But I recall kind of the first time really diving deeper into like supports with young children with disabilities, like learning about that modification and thinking like, oh, well, like we already do that. Like we do that with children with and without disabilities, with the use of emergent curriculum, right? Yeah. Because so many of those pieces that you talked about, I think also align with emergent curriculum. So, following the child's interest and lead. So, mm-hmm. I just bring that up because I know sometimes educators that I work with that maybe their schooling was more of kind of, years ago, it was kind of a little more compartmentalized, right? With mm-hmm. kind of special education and general education. And I think now we're more on a trend of, that they're getting both in the higher ed. But sometimes, I've worked with some educators that feel like they don't have the confidence or like, I'm not sure how to support this kiddo. And then I can kind of use that strength-based approach with the educator as well. Like, let's look at these things that you might already do with young children without disabilities. And these are things you can also work for all children, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. We see that a lot, especially when we're talking about, like you said, curriculum modifications or making adaptations in the classroom. I will always give that disclosure of you're probably going to see things you already do and you didn't even realize they were an adaptation, or, there's something that's already just a measure of quality within your program or your classroom environment that actually can be considered an adaptation for a kiddo, or you just take it one step further and it will be even more of an accommodation for them. So even something like a visual schedule, you're like, I already had that on my wall, or I've always had that because it helps all the kiddos. And I didn't realize that that could be actually a very specific support for an individual kiddo. Or maybe I'll give them a smaller copy of that for them to hold or have with them as well. Or, whatever really simple change they might make that they didn't realize, like you said. And I do think sometimes it is a confidence thing. Because I do think oftentimes educators, especially in early childhood, and I say especially because that's my background, so I'm biased and that's how my experiences are, clouded in my mind. I think within our field, sometimes educators have a hard time crediting themselves with how much knowledge they really have and how much they do naturally adapt and find some more strategies for the kiddos that they work with without even really realizing it. So sometimes when you're encouraging them to try these practices before you've even gone into the examples, they're like, I can't do that. That's for so-and-so who knows all about that. And I think that's something that we really try to do just within the team. When I'm doing any professional development or anything, we try to make sure that folks are able to share their ideas as well, because there's so many good ones that come out of the folks that just come as participants and that I'm learning from them all the time as well, which I think is really exciting and gives us that sense of community that can be really hard when you're in the classroom day to day. So knowing that it can, you know, there are ways that we can support kiddos regardless of what that environment is. And that's the other thing that comes up within this individuality core consideration that I think is just so beautiful and probably my favorite part, even though it seems so straightforward and, you know, factual, is that, you know, children may have disabilities or other individual learning needs, and sometimes they've been diagnosed and sometimes they have not. And I think just knowing that there's always going to be situations in your classroom where you're really going to have to be reflective and strategic about how you're supporting a child. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter what the diagnosis is. We don't need to be judging them based on that diagnosis. We just need to be thinking about what's really going to work for them within the classroom. What adaptations and supports can we put in place now? And how can we reflect on those, you know, as the weeks progress to see what edits we need to make, because we're always going to be making changes in the field just naturally. Children grow, you know, it's not a field where we can just say, you take these five steps and then you're good to go. You know, there's always things that we need to edit, or I always say, go back to the drawing board to think about how we're supporting kiddos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's one of the pieces, like people who are big advocates of DAP, like always talk about how it's just not, you're not going to go to the DAP book and find a checklist of like, you know, if this, then, you know, yes, try this, do this, do this. But I think what you said is really important. I mean, you're basically talking about like the reflective process, the questioning, the problem solving. That's kind of the, that's the consistent, right? Like right. The outcome might look different, right, or the strategy or approach, but it's so much of, I know many times, I mean, I love a framework, you know, I always like, I need to lean on a framework to kind of guide and organize all this content within my brain or what I'm doing. Right. So I think that's helpful to kind of think about, okay, yeah, we've got just coming together as a team, you know, and thinking about what you said. Yeah. Like, how can we, support the kids in the classroom, you know, regardless of where they're at, just looking at each child individually and individualizing and bringing in, their strengths and interest and knowledge and building upon that. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think what can be hard about that, outside of the fact that sometimes we can feel like we don't have the skills or there's pieces missing in our expertise that we need to obtain, even if that's not necessarily the case. It also can feel really daunting to know that it's sort of never ending. Like there is never really, we always say inclusion is a journey. And, you know, I don't think people really love to hear that all the time, because sometimes we do want to just know what the steps are and kind of call it a day. But that's why I think it's important for us to always be highlighting and seeing in statements such as the DAP position statement that there are so many factors to how a child shows up in the classroom, because there's always going to be some new situation that maybe we don't really have a lot of experience with, or maybe a new family will come with a specific challenge that we haven't experienced. And so it does require us to be a little bit more flexible or thoughtful about how we're going to support them. And so that's something that I think naturally just comes from working with humans, especially tiny humans, that's never really going to have an end. And it might be that, oh, we had a similar experience, you know, maybe a couple years back, and there were some great strategies that came out of that that can influence how we support this family now. But ultimately, we see it here within this core consideration. It says each and every child, right? It's always going to have to be individualized. And so I think that's something that can give us a little bit of freedom in the fact that we're not always going to know the right answer right away. And that's perfectly okay. That's just sort of the nature of the work. But at the same time, can sometimes feel daunting if you know, you're doing it in the day-to-day, and it's hard. It's hard work.
Sure. Definitely. Yeah. Really, if anybody thought early childhood was easy, it's constant reflection, constant kind of looking within, you know, kind of your own, like self-assessing your own, you know, teaching and what that looks like and how that might be impacting, you know, how children respond in the environment. Right. I mean, there's so much to consider. I keep thinking just how important, how we have to find ways too, though, for educators to feel safe and this place of belonging for themselves, a community where they can come together and right. talk and share, because that is where, you know, a lot of the learning happens there. But you've got to, you know, have a space where you're able to do that.
Right. And I think you bring up a good point that I think is sort of within those core considerations, not explicitly within an individuality, but, you know, we have to, like you said, think about how we show up, because it's not just that every day we're going to show up as blank slates too. And, you know, we're influenced by what's happening in our own lives, our own identities, our own traumas, our own experiences. And I think it can be really hard in the day-to-day and in general, if you don't really have that sense of community, to feel like you show up and you can give it 110%. I don't think realistically any of us as humans can give 110% every single day. But just going back to the fact that this field is certainly one that poses a lot of challenges on many different layers for us personally and professionally. And if you think about the last couple of years and how those have gone, I would say one silver lining is that folks have realized how important early childhood is, maybe a little more than they did previously. Not folks in the field, but folks outside of the field. I think we always knew what we were doing, but I don't know if others were as aware until it became very apparent just how hard it was. So I think, it's nice to have things like the DAP position statement to sort of help us reflect, but certainly knowing that there is a lot of work ahead and there are a lot of considerations for how we can do that. And it's a challenge for sure.
Yeah. One of the things I heard, I had the opportunity, I think, you know, so maybe 2021, things have kind of blurred, you know, in the past year or two. But I did have the opportunity to go to the DAP symposium virtually. So that was shortly after the position statement was released. But I recall hearing on a panel, someone who was very involved in kind of the development of the position statement and over time, you know, has been involved with NACI, talking about how the position statements, this, I guess, is speaking to your point of how things kind of grow and evolve and change, right? There's new information, new things to think about, that these position statements get like revised oftentimes because they're trying to address like a need or like a, maybe even like a misunderstanding within the field. And so sometimes, the position statements, oftentimes is there as like, okay, well, we're going to make a position about this because we feel really strongly about this, right? And it taking into account maybe some of the newer research and information out there. And so can see how equity is involved so much in this position statement and also how that probably speaks to the work that you're doing as well around inclusion, equity, you know, children with disabilities being able to learn in environments and be in a community, feel that sense of belonging and school early childhood experience.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting the way you said that is sort of how they get to the point of saying, we're going to take a position on it. Because oftentimes if myself and my team members go into a meeting where we're sort of introducing inclusion as an idea that's maybe a little bit new for the folks in the room, it feels like we're taking a really strong position on it ourselves that maybe folks are not as familiar with or as comfortable with, because they are, you know, ultimately our mission is around reducing the number of children who are in self-contained or separate settings who have disabilities. We want everyone learning together in the same classroom. And that can be something that is very hard for folks to imagine if they've been working in a model where they've been using self-contained. And I think it was late last year, we were in a meeting and we were speaking with someone from that area, and they had said, you know, there's a reason we do it this way. We've seen success with this model. And so that's why we continue it. And I can certainly understand why they would feel that way, because as they stated, they've seen success using that model. But we have over 40 years of research that shows us that there's this other way of doing it that is even more successful, and also at the same time is better at supporting the identity development of the children with disabilities and the children who are typically developing. So just keeping in mind, I think really going along the lines of the fact that we revise and update and change our position statements about the field, we can update, revise, and change our practices for the better. And it doesn't mean that we have to say everything we did before this was horrible, but just know that there are some things that we used in that model that were beneficial, and we can take them with us into this new one and leave the rest behind. You know, we do that in so many different ways in the field because so much of what we do is around continuous quality improvement. And so I think just kind of seeing that parallel between, oh, we have a new position because we've thought about this and we see how it influences the real world of young children, is kind of the same as what we oftentimes are trying to do with folks who are maybe not necessarily used to the idea of inclusion. And it really does start with, you know, your mindset. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to see that change, or you're willing to see how those practices can evolve. And I think similar to how we see here that we really want to honor children's strengths and interests, we can honor the teacher's strengths or the related service provider's strengths, right? We know those are certainly there. And I think sometimes it might feel like we're saying those don't count when they certainly do. And kind of what you were saying before, oftentimes when we get into those practices or we get into the nitty-gritty, folks realize that they're already doing things that will support those learners in general education settings. So it's sort of like this big loop of, we're going to get there, but we all need to travel together first. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, as we're kind of getting to a close here, if people are interested, and learning more about inclusion, learning more about early choices and the supports you offer, where should people go? How can they reach you?
Yeah, so we have our website, which has a ton of resources, but also has our events listed there as well. That is eclre.org. But you can also follow us on our social media accounts. We post on there about 3 times a week. It will be kind of a mix of events that we may be hosting, resources that we really like from places like NACI. And so that is, we have 3 accounts. We have our Twitter, our Facebook, and our Instagram. And the handle for all of those is earlychoices.org. So you can follow us on there as well.
All right. Awesome. I will definitely drop that website link in the episode notes, so our listeners today can easily find that website. It's a website that you'll find yourself going back to, I'm sure, if you have not seen it yet. Once you get on there, you're going to be like, oh, wow, there's a lot to explore here. So we hope you find that helpful.
Definitely.
Well, Talene, anything else? Any closing comments for our listeners today?
You know, I think there's so much here that, like we said, we could talk about it all day long. I think the biggest piece is when we're thinking about looking at that statement, there's that definition there around kind of defining DAP. And one of the things it says is taking care not to harm any aspect of a child's well-being. And I think when we look at a child's strengths, we really dive into their individuality, we respect them, and then we have that parallel process for ourselves as professionals and taking the time to respect our strengths and our skills, we can really make a huge impact on our community and on our little kiddos, both with and without disabilities. So I'm happy we have this statement to kind of help us guide our thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So many little, I like to say little nuggets in there that mm-hmm. you can pull out and chat with yeah. people about. So,
definitely.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Thanks to all our listeners. If you have any topics you want to explore further that relate to the position statement, feel free to reach out to StarNet and let us know. We're happy to bring different people in with various perspectives and talk about how DAP, how they kind of implement that and how they use it in their work. So feel free to reach out to StarNet. And thanks again for listening. And we will hopefully see you, or I won't see you. This is a podcast. Hopefully you will subscribe or listen in future episodes of this series. Thanks so much, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. If you have any questions or concerns, please reach out by emailing starnet@wiu.edu or submit a request by clicking on the Request Services tab on our homepage.